We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The House of Representatives breaks the logjam on aid to America's allies on the weekend and passes separate bills to help Taiwan, Israel, and Ukraine with large bipartisan majorities. The Senate is expected to pass the House legislation on Tuesday, and President Biden will sign it. What have we learned about the debate over the aid bills, and will Speaker Mike Johnson lose his job because of it? Welcome on Poll As You Go with the Wall Street Journal opinion pages here on our Potomac Watch podcast, and I'm here with my colleagues Kim Strassel and Kate Batchelder-Odell, who have been following the long saga, which is finally over. And it reminds me of the old line often attributed to Winston Churchill, but perhaps probably apocryphal, that you can count on the Americans to do the right thing after they've exhausted all of the other alternatives. But this strikes me as important a vote, given where we are in the world, as Lend-Lease was to aid to Britain under President FDR when Hitler was on the march in Europe. The real question was, would the U.S. abandon its allies? And credit to Mike Johnson, the speaker who risked his speakership to push the bills to the floor, and credit to Democrats for helping to overcome a faction in the Republican Party and the Rules Committee and on the House floor who tried to block it. Kim, it's interesting to me that the majorities were so large in favor of the bills, you know, albeit with shifting coalitions for each bill. But how did Johnson do it?
How did he do it, Paul? Well, he decided that he was going to face down this small minority of Republicans that had been using different procedural tools at their hands to block this vote for months and months. And what he did in the end, if you look at these bills, the Ukraine bill passed with 71% of the House. And by the way, that was the most controversial of these. But then you look and the TikTok bill, the bill that bans TikToks, also imposed some sanctions on Iran and allows America to try to take some of the assets of Russia. It passed with 83%. The Israel bill passed with 84%, and the Taiwan bill passed with 89%. So you might ask yourself, why have we not done this in the last few months? The administration actually asked for this money back in October, and it's because there were Republicans opposed to this that were using positions that they had managed to grab as part of that speaker fight with Kevin McCarthy on the Rules Committee and on the floor when it came to passing a rule. So the other thing that changed here is Democrats, who wanted to see this happen because the White House wanted to see it happen, decided that they were going to help Republicans, helped move it through the Rules Committee, helped get a rule onto the floor. This was vastly important, and I agree with you. They also get credit. But fundamentally, this comes down to courage, because hanging over Johnson's head all along has been Marjorie Taylor Greene, a Republican who is promising to use this other tool, the motion to vacate, and kill his job. And she decided to hold back for now. We can talk about the dynamics of that. I think she was actually being very strategic in doing that. He gets a lot of credit for making this happen. And I would just note that those numbers in the end show that this was the will of the House, okay? And yes, we do have certain protections in both the Senate and the House for minorities so that they don't get totally ramrodded, et cetera. But this was a small group of people that had managed to gain some extraordinary power that's never been in existence before for a minority of that size, and were abusing it. And Johnson decided to end that game, and Democrats helped him.
Let's listen to Senator Lindsey Graham comment on the vote in the House.
If you pull the plug on Ukraine because you don't have enough capability, there goes Taiwan. The Ukrainians are fighting like tigers. This aid package has a loan component to it. This would not have passed without Donald Trump. I want to thank the House Speaker and Akeem Jeffries working together in a bipartisan fashion to give weapons to Ukraine to fight a fight that matters to us. And President Trump has created a loan component to this package that gives us leverage down the road. So this idea that we can't help Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan at the same time, I reject that. I reject it totally.
K, Kate, I think that probably gives a little too much credit to Donald Trump, since he created some of the opposition to the Ukraine aid in the first place. Although more recently, he has been more circumspect, and he did come up with the loan idea, which is probably a gimmick because everybody knows that loan is going to be forgiven at some point, given the deep hole that Ukraine is in financially. I mean, I just want to elaborate a bit on the one point Kim made. I'll see what your point of view is here on the size of the anti-Ukraine coalition, because it was 112 Republicans voted against aid to Ukraine and 101 in favor, but offered a chance to vote on a specific amendment by Marjorie Taylor Greene to strip Ukraine aid from the bill. She only got 71 Republican votes. So it strikes me that the difference between that 71 and 112 vote on the final bill probably includes a lot of Republicans who are just trying to protect themselves from a primary challenge.
So I think the politics of Ukraine in the Republican conference are, as you know, a little more complex than they appear. You do have 71 Republicans who supported that Marjorie Greene amendment to strip all Ukraine funding from the bill, but you came quite close to getting half of the conference, 101 versus 112, only a handful of votes short there of getting half the conference on the bill. I think it was helpful that Trump this time decided to say nothing about the bill. He, of course, killed the border deal earlier this year because he wants the border issue through the election. But he seemed to be muted here and be happy getting the loan idea, which should mute some criticism. For instance, this is about the money that we give the Ukrainian economy for financial assistance. That's the money that will be packaged in a loan. So there was some success here in getting Trump not to wade into the package and kill it. And I think that's because Trump understands that a weak Ukraine that's on the verge of losing is not the kind of world he wants to inherit if he wins in November. But I think also, you know, some of these Republicans don't want a primary challenger. Like you said, the southern border issue has become so toxic and Republicans can't get anything on that front through the House. I think that is why you had some members who really should know better and are not philosophically opposed to supporting Ukraine end up voting against the final bill. But I do think the most notable development here is that the Speaker of the House made arguments in favor of supporting Ukraine that were in the tradition of Ronald Reagan, in that you don't hear a lot these days that freedom is a good thing that America should support for our friends when possible, when they're fighting our enemies who want to take over their country. So you had here, I think, a show from Republicans like Mike Johnson that I think showed that there really is a fundamental Reaganite impulse in the party that still is the majority of the party, even if you've had some of these scrambled politics. And one example of that, I mean, we just listened to Lindsey Graham. I'm glad he's back in the fight. He voted down Ukraine funding as part of the border deal to express his displeasure with the border collapse and unable to do anything. So you do have Republicans here on both sides of the issue. But I think this is a good sign for the party that you still have 101 Republicans after all that supporting it.
All right. Young senator, freshman senator, once asked Bob Dole on the floor how he should vote. And Dole's answer was, well, you can never go wrong voting for a bill that fails or against a bill that passes. And that might explain some of these Republican votes. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more on the politics of foreign policy in the Congress and Mike Johnson's future.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Kim Strassel and Kate Patchelder Odell here on Potomac Watch. Kate, just want to follow up here quickly on how will this aid affect the battlefield in Ukraine? It's going to make a huge difference when it gets there, no doubt, but give us a couple examples of how.
Well, one of the biggest problems Ukraine is having as they are struggling to hold their defensive lines is that they're running out of interceptors for their air defenses and having to ration those interceptors both at the front lines and protecting some of their civilian infrastructure. So you had an attack a couple weeks ago where the Ukrainians took down missiles that Russians were shooting at a power plant, and they were able to take down the first seven, but then the last four missiles were able to elude air defenses and destroy the power plant. So that's a microcosm of the problem Ukraine is having every day. And you also have really acute ammunition shortages, particularly 155 artillery. I use these two examples because they are places where the United States should have a lot of this stuff pre-positioned in Europe, could flow in very quickly now that the Senate's going to move on the bill and the president's going to sign it. So those are two examples where you could make a difference quite quickly. And that would be very helpful. I mean, morale in the Ukrainian military is really suffering, which makes sense if you are sent to a front line and you have to decide when to shoot back based on not running out of ammunition for the day. The other quick example I'd give is that I don't think it gets enough attention in this bill, but Republicans included a provision in their bill that requires the Biden administration to transfer long-range missiles known as ATACMS, the Army Tactical Missile System. These missiles could make a huge difference in helping Ukraine strike deep into Russian positions or on strategic targets in Crimea. And the Biden administration spent a year and a half refusing to give them the missiles, then gave them a few. This is another example where Republicans could say, we are making the president stronger. We're insisting that he not only help Ukraine, but that he help them win. And that is a place where if the Republicans succeed in forcing the Biden administration to get a real number of those missiles in the Ukrainian hands, you could start to see the battlefield in picture improve for Ukraine.
And Kim, just a coda here on some of these votes. The Democrats, 37 of them voted against aid for Israel in protest to the war in Gaza, and only 21 Republicans voted against that. One of the interesting facts about these votes is there were 14 Republicans in the House who voted against all four of the bills, which means they don't want to give aid to anyone who is American allies. These are the pure isolationists. They didn't even vote for separating TikTok from Chinese ownership, which is striking. Another 17 voted for Israel aid, but against Ukraine aid and Taiwan, which again is kind of crazy strategic logic. I mean, the good news here is I think the isolationist faction in the House is smaller than advertised.
Yes. A couple of notes to make on that particular faction. One, as you say, these folks actually are a very, very tiny minority of the 435 members of the House. So I think that that's a good thing. The other thing to note on these guys is that if you look at them, almost all of them are in crazy safe GOP districts. And so that often gives members license to engage that way. These folks right now are listening to, if you look at polls, there's a certain percentage of uber conservatives, primary voters, Republican voters, who really are implacably opposed to foreign aid. They are entirely in the America First camp. We can't give any money overseas while we have any issue that we need to deal with here at home. The kind of, I call them, that we can't walk and chew gum at the same time caucus. But that's who they're listening to. There's a couple of them that might have a few primaries from the Republican side that maybe should make them a little nervous about this vote. But overall, yes, good news. This is not a broader faction. It's certainly not as big and loud as the microphone somehow suggests.
All right, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, we'll talk about Mike Johnson's future as Speaker of the House when we come back.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
Don't forget, you can reach the latest episode of Potomac Watch anytime. Just ask your smart speaker. Play the Opinion Potomac Watch podcast. That is, play the Opinion Potomac Watch podcast.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Jugo with Kate O'Dell and Kim Strassel here on Potomac Watch. Let's listen to Congressman Tom Cole of Oklahoma. He's now chairman of the Appropriations Committee, veteran of the House, former head of the Rules Committee earlier this Congress, until recently, frankly. And let's listen to him talk about the prospects of a motion to vacate the Speaker's chair that is being threatened by Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene.
I take anything seriously, but no, I don't. Look, I think it's a relatively small number of Republican members, frankly, just as it was in McCarthy's case. There were only eight people.
Exactly.
But the point is, I don't think there's unified Democratic support. There was unified Democratic support to remove the speaker. I think both sides have now seen how dangerous this is, how irresponsible it is. And quite frankly, I think it's unlikely that Democrats who supported Ukraine, not as many supported Israel as we would have liked, but they did support Ukraine. I think they're unlikely to remove the speaker over that. Although, to be fair, they removed McCarthy after he did what he asked them to do, which was keep the government funded.
All right, that's the statesmanlike approach. Let's listen to a rather different temperament from Texas Representative Anthony Gonzalez, who is very unhappy with the chaos caucus in the House.
It has been a brutal Congress, but we're also dug in. You know, for some reason, these fringe people think as if they have the high ground. They do not. I assure you, the rank and file members that normally are kind of easygoing, you know, doing the right thing, put their head down, they vote yes or no, but they're not public about it. Those days are over. The fight is here. And this whole pushing, you know, if someone's going to poke you in the chest, the way you take care of a bully is you bloody their nose. And that's where we're at. We're at a point where we're just trying to govern. And that's what Mike Johnson has done. Govern in an honorable way. You do not leave your allies on the battlefield to bleed out.
Well, pretty forceful statement there, Kate. But in my view, warranted under the circumstances. Marjorie Taylor Greene still saying that despite her failure to bring the motion to vacate right after the votes in the House on the weekend, now says she will do so after the House returns from recess, and she says that Speaker Johnson's days are numbered, whether that is this Congress or the next. Is that right? Do you think she actually has the votes?
Well, Paul, I'll buy you and Kim a drink if I'm wrong, but I predict Mike Johnson survives this and manages to keep his job as Speaker for the duration of the Congress. I don't think Marjorie Taylor Greene, first of all, we know she doesn't have the support that she had when she and others ousted Kevin McCarthy. She also doesn't have the long list of personal grievances that many members had against Kevin McCarthy, whether fair or not. I thought they were unfair. So she needs Thomas Massie to go along with her, which he has indicated that he may be willing to do. But I think it's going to be difficult to get much support for this idea. After a long recess, most members are happy to have the Ukraine issue behind them, whether they voted for it or not. And even those, like we were talking about earlier, the isolationist caucus may be smaller than advertised. Most of them did not really want to just dump Ukraine and let Putin take over Ukraine. So there is not the same kind of animation, I think, among a large group of the conference that would help. There's also now no alternative. Does Marjorie Taylor Greene, she can't command the votes to be speaker. There's simply no one else to go to. And I think the Republican Congress would essentially be over if they depose Mike Johnson. Now, whether Mike Johnson wants this job next Congress, that depends on the size of the GOP majority, which will always influences what kind of speaker that you have. But I think, if anything, Johnson's level of respect among his members and his command on his conference, I think it is improved by the leadership he showed over the past 2 weeks in making a decision that a lot of his members supported to move forward on this, to allow the House to work its will, and then to move on. So I'm predicting he survives, because while it's cathartic to yell about motions to vote and say you're really going to move on it now, it's notable to me that it hasn't happened yet. And I think she may end up having to back down.
Well, it's very interesting. I guess she has two people who have said they join her, Paul Gosar of Arizona and Thomas Massie of Kentucky. But that's it, who've been declared. And on the Democratic side, though, Hakeem Jeffries, the leader, has not declared how the Democrats would vote, as Tom Cole suggested. There have been individual Democrats who have said that they would not vote to depose Johnson, but would vote to keep him in the speaker's job. Tom Suozzi, New York, Long Island Democrat, has wrote that in our pages recently. Ro Khanna, the California progressive on the left of the Democratic caucus, says he thinks Johnson should serve out the rest of his term here. And the argument is, look, they've got vital business to do here in Congress, and the last thing they want is to throw the place into chaos again, Kim. So it looks like Johnson would get enough Democratic votes to keep him in the job at least through the end of this Congress.
Maybe. I think Tom Cole put his finger on it. He's an old hand and he knows how this works. It all comes down to the Democrats in the end. Marjorie Taylor Greene didn't pull the trigger on this at the height of the Ukraine vote because sentiments were running high in favor of getting this bill across. And she understood that Democrats, huge majorities of Democrats, would come to Johnson's aid. The question is, does that spirit remain as we move farther away from this vote? Or is there a calculation on the Democratic side that there would be an advantage to seeing chaos break out again? Now, some of this will come down to numbers. There are three members who said that they would go forward with the motion to vacate. That's obviously less than the eight that went after McCarthy. At the same time, those numbers could grow, and also Johnson's down to a one-vote majority. So this does depend on Democrats. So at a certain point, and I'm a cynical person here, I mean, at a certain point, does Hakeem Jeffries, if this comes down the road, does he still feel obliged or interested in bailing out Republicans on this? Maybe, because I think they've understood that the chaos is problematic for the institution in a way that's bigger than politics. I think it may come down, if that's what happens and Democrats bail on Johnson, it may come down to the fortitude of certain Democrats who are less interested in politics and more interested in governing. I noticed, for instance, that Ro Khanna came out and said that he will be there with Johnson through the end of the term, no matter what. So are there other Democrats that would do that, even if their leadership said, no, you know, let them hang themselves? Maybe so. And the very fact that if there were a few more Democrats that came out and said that, maybe a Jared Moskowitz, for instance, that would probably be the thing that then got Marjorie Taylor Greene to stand down.
I suppose immediately after the recess, when they all return and Marjorie Taylor Greene threatens to pull the trigger, more dangerous time for the speaker would be when they're putting together the budget for the next fiscal year, because that's when there will be Democratic priorities. And I suppose if they decided then to go along with the Republicans who wanted to depose Johnson, that they could. And in that case, you might end up with Hakeem Jeffries being the only one who could win a speaker vote by accident, but that could be possible, depending on how big Johnson's majority is at the time. Still unlikely, but that, I suppose, is possible. All right, we're going to leave it there today. Thanks to Kate O'Dell and thanks to Kim Strassel. Thank you all for listening. We're here every day on Potomac Watch. And this week, we're going to be listening to the Donald Trump trial. And also riots in the Ivy League. A couple of interesting stories to follow if you stick with us the rest of the week. Thanks for listening.